12% of the planets have 71% of the mass. This week, we occupy Jupiter. Welcome to the Midwest Peace Process.
Ladies and gentlemen,
I have the pleasure to present to you now.
Ladies and gentlemen,
I have the pleasure to present to you
the Midwest Peace Process.
The world is very different now.
The Midwest Peace
To remind
process.
America of the fierce urgency of now. 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 Now.
Welcome back to episode 10 of the Midwest Peace Process. I'm Jerry.
I'm Ken.
I'm Rob.
And this week we're going to shake up the order a little bit, and the New World Order. And we're going to skip the main event. We're going to have a lightning round, and then we're going to spend some time on our listeners.
Some quality time.
That's right. Spend some quality time with our listeners.
We love our listeners.
So we're going to do this lightning round, and we each have a story or two that we want to talk about, and we're going to let Rob kick things off. What do you got for us, Rob?
I'll give you a sampler platter. I'll give you two choices.
Okay.
I'll get fired up about either one of them. You just pick which one you want me to get fired up about.
Okay.
I'd say door number two.
Oh, would you like to discuss the 53% movement, the sort of alter movement of the 99% Occupy Wall Street, which isn't really a movement, but there's a 53% idea out there? Or would you like to talk about Rick Perry's recent interview?
Ooh,
door number one or door number two?
I go door number one.
Which one's going to get you more fired up?
Rick Perry's going to get me more fired up. The 53% is more of a let's just do the 53%. I'm getting fired up just thinking about it.
Okay, fair enough.
This is what I do. I provide choices and then don't let you choose.
Okay. That's good.
Good.
That's how I roll.
Being married.
It's just you. I just give you the illusion of choice.
Right. It's kind of like socialism.
Yes. Okay. All right, check your show notes, click some links. You'll see a little link about this.
Yes, we are the 53%.
This scare quote, finger flexion, 53% idea. And the idea is that I guess Occupy Wall Street, I don't know much about the whole idea, but they're claiming they're the 99% that is not the 1% that's the super rich. And so, of course, the right wing has to attack such a thing with an idea of that they're the 53% that actually pay the taxes. So they're trying to get all fired up about that they're the 53% that actually pays the taxes, as opposed to I don't know what. So
the 47 that don't, maybe?
Yeah, so let's talk about this. Okay. So what I enjoyed about this concept, I was like, hey, that's a clever little jab. That's an interesting little soundbite to throw out there that we're the 53%. And all it takes is to let's dig a little deeper into that 46%. And this, as you can read in the article, I mean, the idea is, you know, here's people here's a great quote. Like, I don't blame Wall Street because it doesn't matter what Wall Street or anyone else does. I am responsible for my own destiny. I will succeed or fail because of me and me alone. That's a nice little thought. I don't think that's true anymore, though. I think in what we've learned from this economic crisis is that a lot of people that are in a lot of trouble are in that trouble through no risk taking on their own. That if you bought way more house than you can handle, and you expected your house to ever increase in value, and you put out two mortgages on it so you could buy a boat, well, okay, you took too much risk. Now you're in trouble. But I think that what's unique about this crisis and where we are now and what probably the Occupy Wall Street's really about is I think there's a lot of regular old people out there that didn't take those risks, that worked that job, that did everything that you're supposed to do, as we're indoctrinated to do, as Jerry would say. And the world has crumbled on them, and they're not the ones that took the risk. There's a feeling that there are people or powerful folks out there who took risks and it all went wrong, but they're not the ones paying the price. Everyone else is the ones paying the price. So this feeling of I am responsible for my own destiny, and you'll succeed or fail because of what you do alone. That's exactly what the frustration is that it's not what you do that will allow you to succeed or fail. Because there seems to be we've lost that feeling. And then we've lost that love and feeling. Now it's gone. Whoa. Right. And then what is it really complaining about? You know, so 53% of the people pay taxes. A lot of the reason why other people aren't paying taxes is because we're endlessly trying to decrease the number of taxes that we have to pay. The right wing's endlessly trying to decrease the amount of taxes, and that kicks people off the tax rolls, which should be a good thing. And now we're like, what's the plan here to ridicule those that don't make enough money to pay federal tax, even though they're paying sales tax and state tax and everything else? It's a classic example of something that just doesn't make sense when you dig into it a little bit further, to me.
Well, I'll give you some of it is a little bit dubious, but I think, you know, at its core, the numbers are true, right? 53% are the ones who are actually paying some sort of income tax in the country right now. Yes. You've got the lowest quintile that are, you know, exempt from income tax because they don't make enough money, and then you've got people who make over $1 million at the top that, you know, pay enough to shelter their money so that they don't pay any tax either. So you got the 53% in the middle, basically the middle class, that's pulling the wagon.
Right. So what do we want to do with that other 47? Do we want to raise taxes on those that don't make enough money? Like, what's the conclusion here? Do we want to decrease the number of shelters for millionaires? No, well, we love them. Millionaires, they're the job creators, right?
Well, if it was left up to me, I'd make it equal.
Right. There'd be none.
Nobody'd pay any tax. Right.
And again, this is where Jerry kind of gets a little bit of a pass here, because this is much more the silly Republican than it is.
Well, okay, just like there's these people in the Occupy Wall Street movement who are angry that their life has been turned upside down by no fault of their own, and they want to see the system change. You similarly can't blame the people who the system is working for being perfectly happy with the system. Why is their position any more, you know, why is their position invalid?
Who is the system working for?
Well, it's clearly working for somebody, or it wouldn't be there.
Right? The 1%, or are you saying it's more than 1%?
It's working for more than that, I think.
Yeah, it's probably the top 20%.
Yeah. Not working that bad for me. I mean, I don't have any strong desire to turn it on its ear. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I do. I think it's perfect. No. Do I think it's good?
Well,
no,
I think
but
beef with the 20% is those people are paying lobbyists, and they're donating to candidates, and they're getting things done in Washington that the lowest 20% can't afford to do.
Okay.
Right.
So their voice isn't being heard.
All right.
But
so make your voice heard. Have a movement. Well, do an Occupy Wall Street thing.
I would say that all of them are in the same boat as far as their voice not being heard. You know, even that top 20% that think they're in control, that are calling the shots, they're not.
They're just a vehicle.
I mean, they're paying the check at the end of the night, but, you know, they're not enjoying any of the real benefits.
Yeah, it's like a strip club, right? I'll give you a bunch of money, and you pretend you like me, and give me a seat, and give me free drinks, and we'll all pretend like we like each other. So
they don't
pretend with me.
All right, that's true. I'm sure
they really like me.
I would take issue with what you said, Rob, and that there are people that, you know, did all the right things, and they still got hosed through no fault of their own. I think that's a very small percentage of people.
I agree with that.
You know, in fact, the only people I could point to right now are, you know, the handful of people who have had their homes foreclosed on by mistake by the banks. You know, I'm totally, you know, behind them as far as, you know, they've been They've been wronged by the bank. They deserve compensation for that. And then, you know, look at all the poor souls who lost their retirement accounts at Enron, you know. And I'm not saying that, you know, that was – I think that there's risk involved in anything like that when you're planning for the future because you can't predict what's going to happen.
Correct.
But certainly nobody expects their company to just evaporate overnight and, you know, not leave a penny behind for anybody.
Yeah.
So I don't blame them for relying on, you know, this 401k system that has grown up in this country. You know, everybody seems to rely on it. And maybe that's just a wake-up call for the rest of us. Maybe we shouldn't be relying as heavily on it as we do. But
well, you shouldn't certainly shouldn't have 100% of your money in any one thing.
Yeah.
Those right. people weren't complaining when they were making 40% a year.
Right. But I'm just saying, if I had to identify a class of people who have been screwed over through no fault of their own, those are about the only ones that I feel populate that set.
I think a certain amount of life is just, it's random.
Yeah.
And that's just the way it is. Doesn't and you feel have to random. Accept that.
No, I don't think it feels random. I think that's partly what the Tea Party is about, right? Because now it's really, really like the symmetrical mirror image of this where the evil swirling force is the nasty government. Where it doesn't feel random. It doesn't feel like a slot machine where you know what the odds are, you see what the odds are, and you play this game, and, oh, you lose. Tough luck. It doesn't feel like that. It feels like swirling forces are screwing us.
So you want a system where everybody pops out of the womb and they've all got an equal shot from day one?
Yes. No.
That ain't going to happen, ever.
No, I'm not talking about – I'm talking about fairness. I'm talking about –
Describe what fairness looks like to me. Nobody anywhere is calling the shots such that they can manipulate things so it's good for them and bad for somebody else.
Let's talk about a mortgage. So if I enter into a mortgage, they tell me what my interest rate is.
Yes.
And they're making a calculated risk on their behalf of pretty much buying my house for me, and I'm making a risk that I will be able to pay that back. And they make a profit on that interest. So I think that's just a fine system. That's a good business transaction. Everyone knows what that transaction means. And you can look at historical data. You just like you go to the horse track and see how that horse is doing. You can do all your research and figure out what your risk level is, and then you can make an educated decision on whether you need to take that risk or not. That's a fine transaction. That's fine. If you're the bank, you're going to make money. You're going to use your money to make more money. And when you don't have the money, you're going to be paying more money just to have the house. That's fine. Nothing wrong with that transaction. But the feeling of what happened right here with this crisis is that consumer can enter into that contract thinking that's what's going on with that transaction. But that wasn't what was going on with that transaction. That it was either getting bundled and sent along, and banks were mortgage rating industries were in bed with the people who are rating the securities, and as all of that swirls around, and the whole thing crashes, and so your house is now valued for less than what it would be without the crash.
Okay, so you're saying that the people who got suckered into a mortgage they couldn't afford, that they're not to blame for that. That it was the bank trying to just put some more mortgages on paper so that they could slice them and dice them and sell them as, you know, AAA securities.
I think if you really took the gamble on the adjustable rate mortgage and some house that you there's no way you could really pay for, and you were just hoping that it would just increase in value, and, you know, I mean that's quite a risk to take. I mean, I'm not resolving that risk.
Would I say that never happened? No, I'm sure there's some small number of people who are just complete morons and had no clue that, oh, you mean my net worth isn't $500,000? I can't afford this house. I'm sure there are a few people out there like that, but I think for the most part it was people, you know, that just thought they were putting one over on the bank, you know?
Right.
Like they thought, oh, this bank's so stupid, they're going to give me $300,000 for a house, you know.
Right, right.
But, I work at McDonald's and, you know, I'm only pulling in $1,000 a month.
Right, but I think we agree on that. I think if you do the adjustable rate mortgage thing, you're taking more of a gamble. I'm saying you could get a fixed rate mortgage on a house that any financial planner would tell you was a good buy for your family at that time, and you're doing everything right and right by the book. And the reason why you're underwater on your house by $100,000 isn't because you took too big of a risk or you're overextended yourself. It's that banks crashed and were deemed too big to fail, and Europe went in the tank. Just a lot of stuff happened that isn't in your control as a risk that you are dealing with.
And stuff happens.
I agree with that, but I'm trying to get a handle on who these 99% think they are. Yeah. You know, and if all of them are claiming that they're the ones who got screwed over by you know the subprime mortgage market, I'm sorry, I'm not buying it, because even if every single home that's in foreclosure right now, which I think is like 20 million, even if every single one of those are one of those people, it's still less than 10% of the population. So, you know, where's the other 89% come from? What did they do right and get screwed over for?
Yeah, I don't know who this – yeah, because I guess I'm – you know, I guess I'm in the 99%, but I don't feel like I want to go march on Wall Street right now.
Not
so
yet.
I'm all ready to march,
but I'm sure I'm not marching for the reasons they are.
And you know what? And I think it's kind of unfair to lump them all into being there for the same reason, because I don't think they are. You know, I've read a couple articles, and they interviewed one gal. You know, and you can always find like the biggest idiot in the crowd and put them in a news story. But you know, she had just gotten out of college, and she had student loans, and she moved to New York because she wanted to become an actress, and she was waitressing, and she got mugged, and she didn't have health insurance, and she had a $30,000 emergency room bill, and she thinks that's not right, so she's protesting. Like, well, okay. Well. I would hope that's like the only person in the whole crowd that has that story, but I think a lot of them have varied reasons for being there. Just like I think the Tea Party is not it's not a unified movement of everybody being there for the same reasons. There's a lot of people there for different reasons.
But I think
they have a beef? I think they have a beef, but I guess I don't know what they want.
You can't look at the silliest people, right? You have to almost discern.
They're kind of fun, though.
They are entertaining. But I will go – I'm with them. To the point, to the extent that I recognize that something's not right, you know, that's about as far as I can go, though.
Right. Because, I agree. It's goofy. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, things are effed up. I will totally give them that. But I'm sure the reasons I believe they're wrong are not the same reasons that they believe. So.
Right. Right. Well, and what we would really want is we would want somehow this whatever the essence of the Tea Party is, if it was really a complaint about how effed up things are, you know, they need to go hang out with the Wall Street people and figure out what's common about the way things are effed up. Maybe there's synergies there.
Maybe.
I just wanted to say synergies.
There should be, but there won't be.
But what's more likely is they just want to take money from the top 1% and evenly distribute it among everybody else.
Right.
What they both want is they both want them to be in control, or someone from their movement to be in control, so they can be the people that are at the top. They're not going to say that, of course, because you know that's untoward.
Now I'm feeling sad and cynical.
Well, but
Ken does that to me.
What would they do if they were in charge? What would they do? Would they go, "We've got to make everything fair"? No, they're not going to do that. They're going to take. Because they can take.
Right. Of course, they're tapping into an emotion. I mean, I wouldn't want.
And I don't blame them for that. I mean, thing that amuses me, I guess, is the whole right-wing Tea Party good movement that then looks at the OWS movement and then says, oh, this is so stupid.
Right.
You know, they shouldn't be doing that.
That
doesn't make any sense. If you believe in the right of one to do it, you need to believe in the right of the other to do it, because I think that's okay.
Well,
you don't have to agree with what they stand for, but go get them. I don't care.
I mean, and there's been a lot of talk about that, about when the Tea Party is getting going. These are real Americans making their voices heard in a time of crisis, and like, you know, these are a bunch of mobs,
right?
You know, they're
selling crack,
right? And of
prostitution.
Course, you know, one side will say, look at these guys with the guns and look at this nice Occupy Wall Street mom with her hemp bag. I don't know.
But it's equally funny, I think, how frightened the left is of the Tea Party and how frightened the right is of the OWS thing. I think it's amusing to me that one represents a fundamental right and the unified voice of real Americans everywhere, and the other one is just bad.
Well, right. And I guess probably as far as I'll go with the Occupy Wall Street idea is like I feel empathetic to the anger. That's about as far. Like, and I like that anger of that type is getting heard. So I enjoy that part of it.
If anybody is looking for a system where the big guy gets his and the little guy doesn't get bent over, I don't know what to tell you. You need to just.
But I think we have this endless. I think what I hear out of the right and the Tea Party in particular, what it kind of distills down to, is that we're in trouble. We need to focus our energy into making sure the most powerful and the most rich people are doing as good as they possibly can, because they're the key to the future. And I think it's good to have.
I thought children were our future.
Teach them well.
Yeah.
This is like musical night.
This is.
So that message.
Do you really think that's what's coming out of the Tea Party? I guess I haven't. I mean, they kind of lost me a long time ago, so I haven't really followed.
And again,
some contradictory positions in there, but I haven't gotten. I mean, I think the wealthy do good things for the country.
Sure.
I don't think that could be denied. People. I mean, overly punishing them is not a good idea.
I think I'm mixing up my demons here. You know, I don't think that's really a Tea Party thing, so I probably misspoke there. I mean, it's really more of a hard line Republican thing, which isn't the same as a Tea Party.
All right. Party
movement. But you know, now to throw in the Rick Perry, if we want to just pick a candidate, I mean, the Rick Perry platform is we're not doing enough for these people and corporations, whoever it is that are, like, the powerful people aren't powerful enough, and that's why we're in this trouble. And we could debate that, I guess maybe we do every week. But it's nice to hear another voice that says maybe that's not so true, you know, that maybe the reason why we're in trouble is that we're sick in the middle. We're not just, you know, we're just sick at the top.
Yeah. Putting politicians in charge of regulating things and controlling money is like putting the mob in charge of crime control. You know,
right, right.
You got the fox guarding the hen house there, so
right,
they're going to just shore up what they've already got.
Well, right, and that's why I think this, you know, the Occupy Wall Street idea is, it needs to be kind of apolitical, kind of like the Tea Party was. Those movements have the most credibility and are the most interesting when they don't attach their wagons to one established party.
Yeah.
Invariably
they get shanghaied.
Right. But when the Tea Party really, really makes a lot of sense and really hits its message is when they can be more pure on that and not just fold in a Republican message.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think like I say, I like the Occupy Wall Street feeling, but if I wouldn't want to put five of those dudes up in charge of the government, you know,
I'm wondering.
Policy. I don't know if they even have a policy, but there was a whole time when the Tea Party didn't have policies. We're mad as hell. Hell on the podcast, you know.
I'm as mad as hell and I'm not gonna take this anymore.
Right. I think there's validity to saying you're mad as hell.
Sure. I think that's fine.
Right. So I think they're in the mad as hell moment. I can't imagine what policies would come out.
I think it's going to get a whole lot worse, too. Did you guys see that, you know, they basically shut them down in Oakland? The cops came in and tear gassed them and shot them with rubber bullets.
Great.
One of the protesters got his skull fractured, and he's a... he's a Marine vet, did two tours in Iraq, and, you know, so they're turning him into the poster child for police brutality. And
it's Joe the Plumber.
Yeah. But
we always knew. Doesn't they just do that in Oakland every day, though? Isn't that like Detroit?
Yeah,
don't they just shoot people all the time?
I know. That's what I'm thinking. It just
happened to be a big crowd of hippies there for them to shoot. So
it happened in Atlanta, too, same night. So Me, I'm just waiting for. I thought this might have been it, but it doesn't seem to be now. But I'm just waiting for, you know, one of these cities for a mayor or a police chief or somebody to touch off the tinderbox, and you know, it's going to be the LA riots nationwide.
You think that's coming?
It could.
It could. I think it'll more likely be, you know, like 1960 Democratic Convention kind of thing, right?
Well, that wasn't any better.
No, but it was a little more isolated. I don't know that it's going to just light a fire.
Well, except that you have hundreds or thousands of people just sitting around in all these cities with nothing to do.
Yeah.
You know, they're looking for an excuse. Some of them, not all of them, certainly, but some of them are just looking
to get a job.
They're looking for an excuse to, you know, to start the rioting.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I really don't know where. I'm usually pretty good at predicting these things, but I don't really know where it's going to end. I mean, I don't think it's...
Well, I guarantee that somebody in the White House is looking at this and saying, boy, we got to be careful how we handle this.
How so? What do you...
Well, because it could easily turn into a nationwide situation like that.
It could certainly be ugly, if nothing else, and you don't want that on your watch. So
no,
right, and you got to be careful about what fires you stoke on both sides.
But at the same time, it can't go on forever. So
right,
you know, something will eventually have to be done, and when that something is done, I think, you know.
Well, if nothing else, just like the left, I think underestimated the rallying power of the Tea Party, the right is going to underestimate OWS, right? I mean, they kind of dismissed them as just a bunch of rabble. It's an isolated... It's gaining a little bit of steam.
Oh, I'd say it's way past a little bit of steam. I mean, there's a gathering in every major city in the United States, and it's spread to Europe. I mean, they're Occupy London, you know. There's, you know, it's gone worldwide.
Right.
It'll be interesting to watch.
That's good. And I think the underestimating is again, when you tie it to a party.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not too afraid of those Republicans, you know, like, I mean, they're a mess. The Republican Party is a disaster zone, but the Tea Party as a movement and an idea, you know, that's got some legs, you know, just like this thing does. Like, I mean, this is more of a true tapping into a feeling that's out there in the country more than the stinking Democrats are able to, you know, articulate. Yeah. Same thing, you know.
It's at least real. It's real people.
Right.
I just don't know what they want. But maybe they don't need to want anything. I mean, they can get together and run around with signs and be angry, and that's all. Yeah, go get them. I just don't know what they want.
I think all that's going to happen is it's going to be a valid counterbalance to the same sort of rhetoric that comes out of the Tea Party, you know, which is going to be nice because there wasn't anything to counter that before. You know, everyone's like, ooh, an exciting new movement. Will it be a third party? How is it changing? You know, there was nothing, you know, while Democrats were still doing their little, you know, their Democrat thing, they're falling behind.
Well, I say meet the new boss, same as the old boss, because that's what all these things turn into. So, but for a while, it'll be fun to watch. So, well, go get them, guys. Knock yourselves out.
For more than just a while, we got another year to suffer through this, right, for the election?
Yeah, I can't wait. The ads should be coming out any time now, right?
Yeah.
That's always a good time. Some phone calls. Some people for me to hang up on. Should be good.
Nice.
So I got a story here. The TSA is at it again.
Oh, boy.
I don't know if you guys heard about this. You know how when they rifle through your luggage, they sometimes leave that little note saying that they were there? Have you guys ever gotten one of those in your bag?
I'm not.
Oh, I have.
Oh, yeah. I've gotten them.
Yeah, I mean, it's very official looking. It's got the TSA logo on it and a couple paragraphs about, you know, why they do what they do, and it's supposed to make you feel good about being violated.
I always feel good when I'm violated.
Yeah. So yesterday or the day before, some gal was flying, and the TSA agent that went through her bag found her vibrator in the bag and wrote on that little note, "Get your freak on, girl." And yeah. So she found it and, you know, reported it. And
oh boy.
The TSA investigated. And what do you think happened to the agent?
I think they gave her a stern talking to and let her keep her job.
What do you think, Rob?
I think they made sure she spelled it all right. Once that was okay, it got passed through.
Yeah, well, I think it's interesting that the agent wasn't just fired outright.
Yeah,
you know that they said that they were disciplined. They've been reassigned.
Oh yes,
they're no longer screening bags. But
they're going to rifle through someone else's bags in a different city.
They're going to go fondle children now in the a security checkpoint.
So she became a priest,
apparently. So
to all our Catholic listeners out there, that was completely inappropriate, and I don't really apologize, though, but that's okay. Wow. Is the TSA a union?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. That's what
Big
I thought.
Big time.
Yeah. Okay. Hmm.
Wait.
Interesting.
What do you mean? Describe what that means. I don't even know what that means. I mean, it's an agency.
But they're a union?
Right.
Well, it's very – I think it's traditionally very difficult to fire union employees.
No, but is really?
Yes.
I mean, not about that. I'm talking about the TSA being a union. Tell me more about such things.
They're unionized.
Yeah.
So there's one union that all two TSA members are a part of?
Yes.
I had no idea. How about that?
Yep. And, it's a federal employee union, so I think that means it's a super union of some kind. I mean, I think federal unions have like even more power, more unionists.
How about that? I had no idea.
See? We've all learned something today.
There we go.
Interesting. I'll make sure I don't pack my vibrator next time I'm flying.
Yeah. Leave that at home.
Oof. All right. Good to know. Wow, that's exciting.
Well,
the TSA
has
some. What do I got? I'm going to jump ahead a little bit, I guess. One of our listeners bagged on us for ripping on the Kane 999 tax plan.
Yeah.
So I thought, that's a fair comment. I mean, it's, I didn't know anything about it at the time. I didn't know anything about Herman Cain, and I still really don't, other than what I've looked into here. So the person that wrote was kind of a fan, and I think took a little exception to us just kind of, railing on the dude like he alleged that the media was doing, which, yeah, from what little I've seen, I can understand that.
Yeah.
So I wanted to see what the 999 tax plan was all about, what this revolutionary idea was. So I did not go, and I will state this up front, to Kane's website because I don't think I'm going to learn anything there that's going to remotely resemble reality. I'm going to learn his spin on it. But I did go to a site that alleges to be independent and did a study of this tax plan. So I suspect since I don't pay attention to the news, our listeners know a lot more about this than I do. Have you guys looked into this at all?
A little bit.
Okay, so the 999 tax plan is a 9% income tax across the board, 9% sales tax, and a 9% business tax.
Right.
So obviously after he won, this straw poll or whatever it was, he's on the map and now polls are showing him being a contender and all that. So he made a claim that during one of the debates that it would not raise taxes on those making the least. I think here's the exact quote. So, quote, "It was performed by fiscal associates." This is the people he claims that have looked into his tax plan and assessed it. Quote, "And all of the claims that are made against it, it is a jobs plan. It is revenue neutral. It does not raise taxes on those that are making the least. All of those allegations that the people have made are simply not true." So this group went in and said, I got to find the name of them here. I'll have it in the link, but I'll find it here. The Tax Policy Center, which is an independent policy analysis group that includes tax analysts. So they are party neutral. They are represented Democrats and Republicans. So they went in and said that his claim is not true, that it would lower taxes on the wealthy, which there's a variety of definitions to what the wealthy are, but generally raise taxes on middle and lower income people. Now, that's a little skewed, because when you go into the fact that 46% or whatever, 47% of the people don't pay taxes, by definition, a 9% across the board tax is going to impact them.
Right. Yes.
Whereas they are otherwise not impacted. So, you know, when you're dealing with numbers of people versus dollars, I think, you know, if your taxes went from zero to $473 a year, yeah, that's an increase. But, you know, I don't think it's any less fair to demand that everyone pay some form of tax than it is to kind of rail on the rich for not paying enough. So,
right.
But
that's an age old debate, right?
It is.
Whether
and I don't know what's
tax
fair.
Is fair or progressive tax is fair.
You know, and I've heard the argument that, well, the rich benefit from the system more, so they should pay more. You know, you could go around
and
round,
of course,
and
for
and
me,
that.
It's an argument about how much urine you want mixed into your lemonade.
Yeah.
Do you want 1% urine or do you want 10% urine?
I'd rather have one.
I'd rather have zero.
You didn't give me zero. You said me one. You said one or ten. So
but arguing over that is about the same thing.
It is.
I'm not going to drink your lemonade is basically what it comes down to.
So here's one thing that I will say, that the Republicans love their tax decreases, right? They're big fans of that. The answer to everything is a tax decrease. And I'm a fan of tax decreases. I dig that. I'm good with the concept. I'm not good with the implementation that they suggest a lot of times. But reading about this 999 plan, and they don't have an aggregate dollars that it would add up to. I guess he says it's revenue neutral, which means he's going to collect the same amount of money doing it a different way. And I don't know what that buys. So when you talk about these tax restructurings, the fundamental truth of this that I think people just completely miss out on is when you talk about a flat tax or some kind of massive tax overhaul, if you're not decreasing the amount of money you bring in, you're not really doing anything. You're just shifting stuff around. And if you're not correspondingly cutting spending, you're not really doing anything. That's not revolutionary. Collecting the money a different way isn't accomplishing anything. So I guess...
Well, it is accomplishing something. It's changing who pays more and who pays less. You're making an active choice that say, well, this group of people is not paying enough.
Yeah.
This group of people needs to pay a lot more.
Okay.
And that's why he calls it a jobs package, I think, is because, you know,
it's going to stimulate the wealth.
Well, yeah. His claim is if you lower corporate taxes to 9% from whatever they are right now, that they'll be able to afford to hire a lot more people.
Right. That's the claim. Right. So So I think if you're a Keynesian, not a Keynesian, but a Keynesian,
right?
You basically think we're bringing in the right amount of money, or hopefully it would be less, but certain people aren't paying enough. They're not paying their share. That 47% that isn't paying anything. They need to pay a lot more. And
you say pay a lot more. What does that mean?
Well, I don't know. They have to ask
more than zero. Do you think they should pay more than zero, or should they pay zero?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think everybody pays some form of tax. I mean, but you're talking
sales
about
sales tax, maybe. Not everybody pays income tax.
Right.
Is that good?
I don't know.
Everybody pays 9% sales tax either.
Right. I don't. Yeah. We don't pay 9%, do we?
No.
No.
I think you're you know, when you talk about these types of things, you're arguing, like you said, about who should pay more and who should pay less. And
yes,
you know, there's obviously more money to be gotten from the wealthy, right? Because they have, you know, more money. But there is some fundamental truth there that they do drive the economy more than the person making $15,000 a year, right?
Yeah.
Is that,
Well, and
I don't know. I mean,
you don't know.
Maybe that's a topic.
Maybe.
Maybe none of us are economists, but we all play one on the radio.
I'll pretend though.
I think we're overlooking a couple of things that you know that if I'll play Herman Cain now, he would tell you that first of all there would be no loopholes, right? The tax code would be simplified to the point where you file your taxes on a postcard. Right. You know, you check a box here, sign here, and mail in your check or, you know, whatever. So you've simplified the whole tax infrastructure, thus saving the government, you know, countless millions of dollars or whatever.
So now we got more unemployed people.
Yeah, right. But, you know,
unless you work
they're
for
IRS
postcard
people,
industry.
So, you know.
Well, but you've also got, human. You know, H&R Block people and, you know, there's a whole cottage industry built up around the tax code, right?
Granted, if you work for the IRS, though, you're barely human, so you know I don't count them.
Nice.
The other thing I think he would say is that 9% of, you know, if you make $100 billion a year, 9% of that's quite a chunk of change, and there would be no loopholes, so you don't get out of paying that.
So one could say, well, the highest tax bracket is 35%, but that person's not paying it because they're
right. They're sheltering
games.
Their money, or they're moving it offshore, or you know, doing whatever. And you know, at 9%, it's probably no longer beneficial to you know to try to shelter your income. It's cheaper to just pay the tax. So
is the 999 plan a good thing?
I don't know.
I mean,
I guess tax plan is a good thing. Taxation,
but you're not going to get rid of it. That's not going to happen. So you have to get rid of that notion. I mean, in the short term, anyway. So let's move it in a better direction. How do you move it in a better direction? Simplifying is good. I like simplifying.
Well, I would say the income tax could be abandoned. The government makes enough money off of excises and fees and imposts and duties and all the other classifications of tax to run the government. You know, you'd have to cut out an awful lot of stuff.
Right.
You know,
I think too much stuff. That goes back to our
One
of our earlier shows. You gotta do baby steps here a little bit, so.
But I think to me the first baby step is get rid of the income tax.
Are you a fan of a usage based tax? Would that be better?
Well, that's the sales tax he's talking about, right?
Yeah, right.
Consumption tax.
Mm-hmm.
I'm
better with that because you can always make the choice to not buy something, right?
Yeah, it's at least avoidable. So
I like not buying anything.
It's a slight improvement.
I will say that as the resident lefty that it's obvious that these simplified tax plans, you know, on my Rick Perry thing, you know, with his 20% postcard or whatever he's got going, it's not just about simplifying. I mean, that's tapping into a frustration of Americans that their 1040 is so long and confusing. But what it is, it's a shifting of who pays what. I mean, everyone's trying to shift it, and that's what I hope I can explain to our lovely listeners out there that. Is that if there's some knob out there that the left is trying to twist as far as what those proportions are, I think they will gladly admit that they're trying to twist those proportions. That's what they're doing. They're like, look at my hands right on this knob. I'm twisting it.
Right.
See me trying to twist this? And I think for the right, they're like, oh, you shouldn't touch that knob there. That's my Rick Perry voice. You know, we got to take our hand off that knob. But when what they're really doing is they're doing the same twisting in the other direction. That they want to change the proportions in a way that they see as more fit.
Mm-hmm.
And so everybody's got their hand on the proportion knob.
You're just saying one is being intellectually honest and the other is saying, look over here and
right, exactly.
Pay no attention to what I'm really doing.
Yeah, right. To the hand on the knob.
Right.
I keep wanting to make a knob joke there and I am really struggling. We got to use a different word. Okay.
Well, okay. So, Rob, in your opinion, Which is the more fair tax structure, a flat tax or a progressive tax?
I'll go ahead and say a progressive tax.
Okay. I guess I'm not surprised by that. But,
right.
I mean, that really is the fundamental argument here, right? It's, mm-hmm. it's what is a fair tax on people? And, you know, I look at it from the point of view of that bottom 20% we keep talking about that pay no income tax whatsoever.
Right.
And yet they are benefiting from all of the things the tax money is spent on, yep. just as much as the guy who makes $100 million a year.
Yep. Some portion of it.
Yeah. I mean, their country is being defended by a military.
They got roads.
They got roads. They got, you know, all of those things. They're
not living large, but they're still enjoying the benefits. I would agree with that.
And yet they are paying nothing for it. So yep. I don't know how the argument can be made that is fair.
Right.
I'll buy that. I'll go with you. Go with you on that.
So when they do their little analysis here, and I, you know, I'm not naive enough to think that all these independent groups are perfect and you know, righteous in their execution of what they're trying to do. They may have good intentions, but does that get accounted for in these studies when, you know, okay, yeah, the upper tax bracket is 35%, but okay, this dude's not paying 35%. So, yeah, you're going to do the math and say, well, 35 minus 9 is this times their income. Oh, their taxes go down. But do they really? I'd be willing to bet that's not accounted for in here. But it doesn't go into enough detail to say the answer to that. It seems like we're just throwing, you know, the 52 cards up in the air and letting them fall, and you're really not changing anything.
Could be,
you know,
and it could be too that all the rich people just get better at hiding their money, and
they got to find some different way to right.
Well, I think and you, Ken, you're more worried about just the net draw of the government. Jerry, you're probably more concerned with that. Like you probably don't care as much about who it comes from. You just want that number to be lower.
Yeah.
Right.
And I agree. I'm on board with that. I don't think it should be zero. I don't think we can go to zero, but I mean, I think it should be lower, but I think then you've got to do some other smart things to, you know, cut spending so that you don't have the situation we have right now.
Right. And I think what raises the ire of a Perry flat tax, I think is not so much the lower part. Maybe we all agree government should take in less, you know, I mean, that's probably got actually some support, but it's more of a factor of who we need to worry about paying those proportions, I think.
Right.
You know, and I think if you're a hardcore Republican, you're like our first priority needs to be the job creators,
mm-hmm.
as they say. And I think that raises an eyebrow to others.
Well, I mean, do you believe that you or your equivalent socioeconomic group of people, that your tax burden is over much? Do you think it's too much? Do you think it's out of proportion?
I don't know. You know what? I don't really think about it.
Okay.
But that's kind of...
It just seems like there's a lot of bagging on the rich. Like, they don't pay enough. Okay, well, what's enough? I mean, where do you get
rich?
To that tipping point? Yeah, and what's rich? That's another very valid question. I don't think anybody's ever defined that. You got Obama's like over 250 grand definition, and you know, there's been various definitions that people have used, but I think it's very easy to say that word rich, and you know, it just makes everybody think, those bad rich people. But there's probably a bunch of people that are qualified as rich that don't know it.
Yeah,
because it's a very easy word to throw out there. You know,
Well,
those darn rich people. They're not paying their fair share. Well, what does that mean? What is a fair share? What should they pay?
Everything's relative, right?
I don't think it really matters. I mean, if we were really wise and real experts, we'd have numbers and percentages and Bush tax cut, you know.
The lower middle class guy that's making $50,000 a year, he's rich compared to, you know, somebody living below the poverty line.
Right. So,
Rob, were the Bush tax cuts good? Did you like the Bush tax cuts, or did you not like the Bush tax cuts?
Again, I will answer your question by saying what I was going to say anyway.
Oh, okay. That's, how convenient.
I think the key is that it's the big part of the argument isn't the percentages or 250,000 or 230,000 or 15.8%. It's exactly where you think those proportions lie. Like, mm-hmm. and do you feel like the problem right now in the tax structure, if you needed to leave revenues the same, the problem right now is that people, we'll call them poor people, poor people aren't paying enough, and rich people are paying too much. That's the question. I mean, you could talk about 15.8% or whatever your percentages are, but that's the fundamental question, isn't it?
Well, it's all arbitrary. I mean,
it's very arbitrary.
You're not gonna find the magic number that everybody's going to agree to.
No.
So,
what's your feeling?
I think you need to, if you're going to have an arbitrary tax system, you need to minimize the arbitrariness. And right now, it's not only arbitrary in who pays the tax, but then the people who pay an arbitrary amount. So I think, you know, a flat tax is definitely more fair in the sense that everybody's paying the same percentage of their income.
Yeah.
So,
right. So
even if it's an arbitrary amount, like 9%, at least everybody's paying the same amount.
Right. So you're saying it's not fair because the fairness that a flat tax of a 999 would be isn't because so much that everybody's paying the same amount, but that it's taking the arbitrary nature out of government legislators coming up with some crazy plan that it removes all that junk.
Not all of it. Because 9% is still an arbitrary number, but
right. But you're making it at least more clear.
Yeah, right. we're narrowing it down to one arbitrary number instead of 12.
Right. I'll buy that. I'll buy that as a fairness because it would take out slop and corruption and garbage that has made the tax system what it is. Right.
But even if we could go to the 999 system, does anybody really believe it would stay at 999?
No, that's another fundamental flaw. My argument is, exactly. They're going to ratchet that up. They do it now, right? I mean, if there's some fundamental level that's required to run a country or run a state, I would think you could set that percentage, and as inflation goes up and salaries go up, you're going to collect more tax revenue. And if you have to go beyond that, I would say you're doing something you shouldn't be doing.
Yeah.
So set that level and say, this is the means we have to live within. And if we want to get something, we got to give something up. You can't invent new things to do and then add a 0.25% sales tax and a 0.25% transaction tax on this and, you know, start generating hundreds of thousands of dollars various places to pay for new stuff. Eventually, you have to end up paying 100% tax, right? Over some infinite amount of time.
Right.
If taxes continue to go up, you know, you're going to squeeze it out, and then salaries go up to some crazy level, and you know, because you still have to live after you take taxes out. So it's just this feedback loop that I think is damaging to the economy. If taxes went down, I think salaries would go down, prices would go down. You know, I think all that would happen. I think a lot of this is artificially propped up because of the system.
Agreed.
I mean, do you need to make the salary that you make, really? I mean, you only need to because that's what things cost on the back end because of how much taxes are taken out and how inflated is your home price because of all these things. And I don't know. I just think it's a little bit of a game of Jenga here, the way the economy works.
Yeah, that's a good analogy. Sooner or later, somebody's going to pull that bottom block out.
And, oh, boy. Now what, you know?
Well, maybe
that's the OWS thing.
Yeah, maybe we're there. They pulled the last block out in Oakland. Okay, so I got another quick story here.
Ooh, good.
Dollar coins.
Oh, boy.
What do you guys think about dollar coins?
I think there's a whole lot of them sitting somewhere not doing anything.
Yeah.
That's what I've heard as well.
Well, USA Today had this story today about the super committee, you know, the debt super committee that's been meeting behind closed doors.
Gosh, I have a story about that too. This is perfect.
Well, I guess one of the cost savings proposals that they're kicking around is eliminating, you know, paper dollars and going to dollar coins.
Okay.
Because it would save $5 billion of the federal budget over 30 years or something. And of course, this has turned into a political thing.
Shocking.
Yeah. One of the guys on the committee, I guess, proposed this 25 years ago. He's been pushing to get rid of the paper dollar for forever. And then John Kerry is also on the super committee.
Oh, boy.
And he's from Massachusetts, of course. And the company that makes the rag for dollars to be printed on is in Massachusetts.
Uh-oh.
So, of course, he's opposed to this
of
plan.
Of course he is. Not because of that, though. Not because of that. It's because he genuinely believes in the paper dollar.
Right, right.
It has nothing to do with that.
Of course.
Okay.
But, reading the story, it was interesting to me because it ends with them saying that, $1.1 billion in dollar coins are sitting in storage right now, not being used. But it doesn't mention the fact that it's being stored by the Federal Reserve in their vaults, and they're charging the government rent for all of those coins. So it's not just that there's over $1 billion sitting there not being used, but it's costing us money the longer it sits there.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And of course they continue minting these, the golden dollars with the presidents on them because by law they have to, that law was passed 3 years ago or whatever. And if they stop minting them, they'd be violating the law. So they have
to go on. They never do that.
They have to go on creating these coins that nobody wants. But my position on this is I think we should switch to dollar coins. I think it's a much better system.
Absolutely.
But the problem is nobody has the backbone it's going to take to just say, you know what, we're going to the coins. Paper dollars are going away.
Yeah.
We're not going to use them anymore.
Yeah.
And instead, all of them hedge their bets and say, okay, we'll get rid of paper dollars as soon as there's, $600 million in circulation of the gold coins. Well, that's never going to happen because people don't want to use them.
Right.
You're going to have to force people to use them.
I don't understand why people don't want to use them. I'm a little confused by that.
I don't either. I mean,
I'm completely on board with, I think they should quit making pennies and nickels and dimes and get rid of the paper dollar. I mean, why do you need anything smaller than a quarter?
Yeah.
Why?
What don't you like about the paper dollar?
It just doesn't need to be that. It'd be cheaper to and less able to counterfeit a coin. So we can go with coins for everything as far as I'm concerned. That's probably not completely practical, but I just don't know why we have to have a paper dollar. I think we could the unit of measurement of buying things is such that you could have a dollar coin, I think, and be just fine. What's wrong with having
people just not like it in their pockets? I don't know. I guess
I've heard that argument, but that's not. I mean,
how many singles do you have in your wallet?
Exactly, exactly. People that's don't what carry I'm saying. Around the unit $20 in coins in their wallet. They're not going to carry $20 in coins in their pocket either.
A dollar is like a quarter was 20 years ago. So you don't walk around with a
and besides,
of 50
nobody
singles.
Buys anything with cash anymore anyway. We're all using debit cards. So
whoa, wait a minute. What would they do at? Strip club.
Wouldn't you like to know?
Yeah, how do you pick up a gold coin?
Well, it's going
to go on location.
I think this is going to require some research.
Field trip. Okay. Got our next
show. Inflation's going to happen, and you'll have to put a 5 up there.
See? So it's good for the economy.
See?
Cocaine is not cheap. Okay? Those girls have got to...
That's right.
They got to get theirs.
Those gallon jugs of perfume that they use backstage, somebody's got to pay for that.
So then they make more money. They buy more glitter. That's Target makes more money. This is a win.
Going up,
it's a stimulus package, is what it is,
so to speak. Excellent. I was like, Rob, you want to keep the dollar bill, the paper dollar?
I have absolutely no feeling about the paper dollar.
What about pennies and nickels and dimes? They're silly.
Pennies are silly. I'll give
pennies
you that.
Are completely silly.
But I'll keep my nickels and dimes. Thank
you. So?
Have you ever thrown away pennies? I've started throwing away pennies, right in the trash.
I won't do that.
I'm doing it.
Why?
You should collect them and melt them down, Rob. Although that's illegal. But they're worth more. Their melt weight's worth more now than their face value.
Because I think this is the feeling. Like I'll buy something and I'll have 7 cents change. So the nickel, hey, it's 5 cents. That's what a nickel's worth. But then I'll have these two pennies here, and I think of what those two pennies are worth to me. And do I if I hold on to those two pennies, I need to put them on my desk or on my counter, and then they're going to fall off and they're going to get hit.
Don't you have like a change jar or something somewhere?
Not usually, no. Maybe I
what if
one?
The federal government issued you an official change jar?
Even if they did, like, it's not worth it's the tracking cost for my brain is like 3 cents to keep track of 2 cents.
I'll tell you, do me a favor. Keep your pennies and give them to me.
Yeah.
I will keep track of them for you.
No, but I don't want you to win.
Oh. And we just have a change jar, and I don't carry change around in my pocket at all. I come home and it goes in the change jar, and at the end of the year we got $300-400.
Yeah.
That all adds up, man. What?
$400.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I'm keeping my pennies now.
Yes, you should keep your pennies. It adds up over time. That's what I'm saying. If you don't think they're worth anything, give them to me, and I'll add them up, and I bet eventually they'll be worth something. So, except I think they should go away. So, I just don't see a point.
I never have $400 worth, but I typically have $50 worth every time I take it to the bank.
Let's say we round the price of everything to the nearest dime. Let's get rid of pennies and nickels. I mean, do you really need to have something that's something 99?
No.
Really? No, you don't need that. That's silly. I'd say just get rid of that. It's just nonsense.
All right. Well, we're going to take a little break. And when we come back, we're going to do listener feedback. We're going to have some quality time with our listeners. Talking about, in a good way, our listeners.
What other way is there to talk about our listeners?
Well, I guess I could tell them to suck it again.
That's true. Yeah, it only happened once. One time.
True. Going back to last week, but we didn't have an episode last week. Our last episode about intellectual property, we had a listener comment that we'd been talking about plagiarism and how that would be handled if we, you know, got rid of copyright law. And this listener pointed out that misrepresenting somebody else's work as your own is wrong. It is fraud, and there is a victim, the consumer. So an anti-intellectual property ideal can still embrace the concept of plagiarism as being wrong. So I just thought that was an interesting point to make that, you know, we kind of separate that as, you know, and I think he's right, identifying that as fraud, that it is.
Yeah.
So it you know, I think the example you used, Ken, was, you know, somebody started cranking out Star Wars movies.
Right.
If they tried to represent it as George Lucas's Star Wars movies, then it would be fraud and, you know, you would have an action against them.
Yeah. All right, I'll buy that. I think a lot of times you'll find these little odd laws that we enact, and there's already a law on the books that prevents it. You know, like the whole hate crime thing, that's one of my many pet peeves. Or, you know, when you add on extra years because something's a gun crime versus something else, I kind of shake my head at some of that. I mean, if you're robbed or whatever happens to you, I don't think it matters what the implement is. I don't know why that would matter. It seems like the act is the important thing, right? Maybe in this case it's the same thing. Fraud covers this, so you don't need some extra layer of law on top of it. It's fraud is fraud. It doesn't matter what it is.
Right. I think that's right.
And Rob is silent.
Thinking.
Ah.
Letting it wash over me, the wisdom.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, next.
Eric is back.
Yes.
Yay.
Eric says, I'm actually back to one of my original points. Why is it easy for you to separate the wheat from the chaff, so to speak, on evolution, vaccines, etc., but not climate science? I think the science of those subjects is just as hard to understand. Says I'm let's see. How many source papers have you read on evolution or vaccine studies or cancer research or dark matter? I'm guessing zero, because that's how many I've read too. They are very dense and nearly incomprehensible to me. I truly am interested in this subject. I've told Ken that I find the psychology of what science is accepted and what isn't really fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. Good comments there.
Him and I have had this discussion, and I have to admit that I'm at an impasse on answering his question. So I've told him that I will retreat to a neutral corner and contemplate, because I do see a difference. I think you can use science to prove that climate change is happening. I still don't know how you prove that it's man. I guess I still see a difference in my mind there. Maybe it's because I want to see it.
Right.
But I haven't been to the moon, you know, but I believe what, you know, I've been told about the moon. I do believe in evolution. I do believe in a variety of other things that I've not proven to myself. So why do I trust that science and not trust the science of climatologists?
Right.
And it's a very good question.
It is. And if you read the science, I mean, I tried to do some homework on this before we got to it. And like, I don't know why I was surprised, but I started reading. And I was like, man, this is hard. It's hard to understand these atmosphere levels and ionospheres. And but like, why did I expect it to be cake? You know, I wouldn't mm-hmm. open the Journal of New England Medicine and, you know, oh, yeah, I understand this cancer research. You know, I wouldn't have any idea what they're talking about, but I somehow expected to read this climatology study that was equally as high level of science, and I expected it to just, you know, be obvious to me. Why?
Yeah. Well, I think, and maybe this isn't fair to expect scientists to be good at this, you know, because it's not really part of their job description, but when it comes to this particular topic, they need to be good at explaining it in layman's terms.
Right.
You know, that, and that's not the case for some other areas of science. You know, like,
I don't know that they need to be. They just have to accept the consequences that if they do science because that's what they do, then somebody else is going to spin that to the public.
Well,
like they do with everything else, but this one maybe is particularly.
If you accept the premise that we are destroying ourselves, or we're destroying the planet, or we're, you know, whatever, that we're, you know, we're causing some detrimental effects here. If you accept that premise,
true.
If you accept that, then you have to be ready to explain how it's happening and then be able to educate people so that they stop doing it.
Yeah.
And if you can't do that in layman's terms, then, you know, all you're going to get is Fox News saying, oh, well, you're talking way over my head. You're an intellectual elitist, and I'm not going to listen to you. And, you know. So, you know, as sad as it is, you got to be able to explain it to Joe Sixpack. Otherwise, you're wasting your time.
Well, but why doesn't the astronomer who found a new galaxy out there have to explain it to Joe Sixpack?
Because there's no implication to a lifestyle change that he found a planet 14.7 light years away.
Right. Dark energy does not impact my life at all.
Climate exactly. change does.
So it's all about the conclusions. It's that looming conclusion that mm-hmm. you're about to jump to that affects right. everything.
Right. Yep.
Maybe we've answered the question somehow. You know, if you feel like if I have to accept your premise, then I have to make changes that I don't believe are correct or fair, then I'm going to try to fight your premise.
Yeah, I think that's true.
Galaxies do affect me, though.
Do they?
They affect my star charts and yeah. my
They affect your mood.
My crystal orientation. Sorry to offend the crystallogists out there.
That's all right. Let's see. We'll go back to Eric. Eric says, it's interesting that you picked J.K. Rowling as an example. Are you familiar with the fake Chinese Harry Potter novel, Harry Potter and the Leopard Walk Up to Dragon?
Harry Potter and all your base belong to us.
Yeah. All your Harry Potter belong to us.
That's awesome. Is it a good book?
Well, I would say this is a good illustration, though, because, I mean, is anybody really going to be fooled? You know, if you've read Rowling's earlier works, are you going to be fooled into thinking that this was a legitimate part of the series?
You can bank that some doofus would buy it and then would complain.
And, well, if that's the case, then you know what? That author deserves to be rewarded for this.
Yes.
And, you know, in my opinion, claiming exclusive ownership of imaginary things is about as contrived as it gets.
That's very contrived, but I like it. I'm good with it. It's artificial.
It's my artificial.
But it's, I don't know. Yeah. I can see your point. When you come when it comes to fiction and fictional universes and characters and things like that, you get into a very squishy area. But I don't know. I like that you can create something that's your own and that you get to protect it and make money off of it.
Yeah,
I'm okay with that. It's still a concept. I mean, it's no different than being able to build someone that someone else can't duplicate. You know, you can protect that. That process, you know, that you use, maybe if you can keep that under wraps, but you can't.
Well,
okay. You can't keep an idea under. You can't keep the art of writing under wraps.
But ultimately, you are creating something inside the reader's mind.
Yeah.
So how can you expect to control that something after you've created it there? I mean, you can't take it out again once they've read it, once they've had that idea, you can't unsee it.
Oh, yeah. I don't think they want them to unsee it. I think they want to have exclusive rights to continue to create more of that in those people's minds.
Okay, but why shouldn't they be allowed to create some?
They can. They just can't make money off of it. They can do. There's fan fiction out on there. You can write till your pants fall off. That's fine. You just can't publish that and make money off of it. Right?
Right.
Well, it's currently constructed, yes. But
yeah.
I think that's contrived. I think
it is contrived.
Well, okay. As long as we agree on that part.
I am good with the artificial construct.
I think there's a difference.
The holodeck.
Yeah, I love the holodeck. I'm a fan of the Matrix.
There's a difference between extending somebody's work, you know, or you know, if you're going to quote, if you're a jazz musician and you could, you know, quote someone else's solo, or you're a rap artist and you can sample somebody else's stuff. There's a difference between extending something and making it your own, like your own fan fiction or Harry Potter and the Walk Up to Dragon. Love that.
The Angry Dragon.
But that's a different thing than someone developing a novel, putting it in print, and then somebody just copying that novel and saying and selling it themselves. I don't think you're not buying the book, you're buying the content. So you can't steal that content. You can create your own content with your Harry Potter and the Dragon, but you can't steal, in my view.
We had a couple of listeners respond to our mention of Article 1, Section 10 and the obligation of contracts. One listener, Eric, said, I think Article 1, Section 10 of the Constitution just prevents states from making laws interfering with the obligation of contracts. No state shall pass any law impairing the obligation of contracts. I don't think this implies what the federal government can do. Maybe there's another section about that. And I would say, yeah, that section's called the 10th Amendment. If it's not a power that's explicitly granted to the federal government by the Constitution, then it's assumed that it's left to the states or to the people.
Well, that's a good notion, but that's certainly not the way we operate, right?
No, unfortunately.
We've ignored that provision for roughly the entire existence of our country. So,
another listener said, under common law, a contract with obligations whose performance would be an illegal act or a contract that is written illegally is unenforceable. So if you took somebody to court over a breach of such a contract, the judge would either not recognize the contract or that illegal portion of the contract. Also, under the common law, the legal maxim, the principal is the agent and the agent is the principal, would demand that both parties to an executed contract for an illegal act are guilty of the illegal act. So,
okay.
It basically speaks to, you know, what we were talking about. If you hired somebody to murder someone.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Thank you, listener.
Yep.
Reminds me of an episode of Cops I saw one time where a cop had someone pulled over and someone ran up to them frantically and said, I was trying to sell this guy drugs and he robbed me and kept his money and stole the drugs. You need to go arrest him.
Right.
And the cop, of course, arrested the person that came and reported himself.
Well, there was just a story in the news a week or so ago about two guys broke into some dude's house and they stole his laptop and
found kiddie porn.
Yeah, did you read that?
and he got arrested, right?
Yeah, they turned the guy in, and even though they were guilty of stealing his stuff.
Did they get arrested too?
I don't think so.
My word.
I don't remember, though. I'd have to go back and read it again, but I just thought that was funny that they felt that was so bad that they were going to risk getting busted for burglary.
Well, right.
Honor among thieves.
As I understand it, and for prison culture, since I'm very much an expert on prison culture, you know, like those guys, I mean, those guys do, whoever you got thrown in there have all done some pretty bad stuff, unless they're all innocent.
Which they are.
Right. But yeah, you get the kiddie porn guy in there, and it doesn't go well for that guy.
See, I've heard that too. Is that true though, or is that urban legend? I don't know.
I think that's true.
You think it's true, but do you know it's true?
If any of our listeners are in the lockup, can you
or formerly?
Yeah.
I'd like to know
if that's true.
Yeah, that would be good.
Confirm or deny. Mythbusters that.
Right.
Yeah, I don't want to do an undercover operation and go find that out. That's not something I'm interested in experiencing.
Eric responded to a comment I made where I said, murder is wrong because it violates the rights of the person you are murdering. He said, maybe on a future episode you can discuss what rights all people have. I mean, for example, when does the right to life begin? Obviously, there's a lot of debate about that. Mm-hmm. Can someone forfeit that right if they commit a heinous enough crime? Are wars ever justifiable? What other rights are there, and how do they balance against one another? I can't think of a great example right now, but I'm envisioning scenarios where exercising my right may infringe on someone else's.
Depends how you define those rights, for sure.
And I would say, yeah, I think that would be a great episode or a series of episodes. So maybe we will do that.
Let's do it.
Yeah, I think when you talk about giving people the right to practice whatever their religious or political beliefs are, whatever they might be, you open yourself up to that, to infringing upon someone else's rights.
Yeah.
Those two things are artificial as well and can have boundaries that encroach upon each other. That would be an interesting discussion. The when does life begin thing. That's a tricky topic, of course, but
yeah.
But well, a fascinating one.
Well, we could hit that. I think we could hit this issue without going nuclear.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to go nuclear. I don't have I think some of the positions of the various factions involved in this are kind of interesting and contradictory in a way, but that's a topic for another time.
We have we have at least one new listener.
Yay! Welcome, new listener.
Welcome to our new listener. And let's see, where did I write that listener's comments? Do you have them, Rob?
I'll go ahead and read the salient part.
Okay.
He said would have been more. He was happy to hear that we brought up Mr. Kane, and would have been more interested in your critique of how the 999 plan would or wouldn't work versus just cracking on it like the rest of the media. Snap.
Yeah, boy.
We'll take that. We'll,
yeah.
I'll accept that criticism.
Well, I think we did it justice, though.
A little bit more
time around.
Right, right. You know, and but he's asking us to expand or discuss, you know, the what Steve Forbes had for his flat tax or the Ron Paul no tax or a Soviet tax plan or the current tax plan and tweaking it a little bit. You know, we could.
What's a Soviet tax plan?
I don't know. Maybe our listener will write in and tell us what it is. Come on, listener. We just want email.
Pretty please.
I think, wasn't Forbes flat tax 10%?
I don't remember. I remember that was 92
when he ran? So.
Yeah, and that kind of got a lot of attention at the time, but he's such a
squirrel. Or was it 96?
I think it might have been 96.
Yeah, it was the same time Bob Dole.
Is that right? Okay.
He was in the same field with Bob Dole. Bob Dole.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah. Poor Bob. Yeah, I don't remember all the details, I guess, of that. But
well,
it's certainly
I don't think
been
he had a lot of details. He got a lot of media play because he was one of the first. Maybe not one of the first. I think Ross Perot was talking about a flat tax too, but
okay.
He had actually, you know, put some research into it and actually had, you know, a plan already laid out.
Okay.
But if I remember right, it was 10%, but
okay.
I'd be wrong about that.
I just never understand when people talk about these tax plans. I don't understand what they're going for. You know, are you going for higher taxes or lower taxes, or do you think the amount of tax that we collect is just right and you just want to shift it? I'm never really clear what the motive is. But I think when you talk to the common person and you hear tax reform, you think, I'm going to pay less taxes.
Right.
And that's not what tax reform is. That's what I want it to be for me. But I think people hear that because that's what they want to hear. But that's not what politicians are talking about.
Yeah.
And that's where my fundamental fallacy comes in, that they're just kind of shuffling things around a little bit. But, you know, you have just as good a chance of getting hosed as you do of benefiting from this. And I would argue that tax revenues are never going to go down. That's not going to happen, you know, by any of these revolutions, because they've still got some outlay of cash that they have to meet. And having taxes go down is not very conducive to that, you know. So you can preach all you want during a primary about this, that, and the other thing, but when you get elected, you have to deal with that fundamental reality that, you know, there's money that goes in and there's money that goes out. So
right.
How are you going to deal with that? And primary plan is going to differ a lot from elected plan.
So what about my comment that taxation is theft?
That's a very Jerry comment.
Well, yeah.
Doesn't the Constitution provide for taxation, Jerry?
Yes.
But however,
it's right.
No, I agree. But you know, by definition, anything in the Constitution is somewhat artificial, and you can argue the. If it's in the Constitution, it may be legal, but you could argue whether it's right or not.
The Constitution actually prohibited capitation tax, which, you know, was a tax on you just because you exist.
Uh-huh.
And the first attempt at an income tax was declared unconstitutional on those grounds in 1894. And it took them a few years to figure out that they needed to pass an amendment in order to classify an income tax as something other than a direct tax. So that's why we got the 16th Amendment.
But doesn't that say that it has to be apportioned by state?
If it's a direct tax, yes.
Hmm. What else does it talk about then?
Well, there's indirect taxes, which are things like duties, imposts, and excises.
Okay. So did they just get income qualified as something that fell under the indirect tax and then life was good?
Yes.
Okay. Gotcha. Because the apportioned by state thing, I can get on board with that.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that. I mean, states get the vote, right? And you know, you decide whether something is worth doing or not, and everybody's got to pay their quote-unquote fair share. And I think that would be reasonable. That's also untenable, right? Because not everybody would be on board with that, I don't think. So
why isn't taxation theft?
Why isn't it theft? Oh, boy.
I mean, logically, how do you distinguish it?
Well, for one, presumably, we've all voted to accept such taxes.
Presumably, yeah.
Presumably, that's right.
But that is not, in fact, true. So, so it's this big game of make-believe that we all have.
There's a lot of make-believe going on. I think there's some truth there. I don't know. I don't know if I'd classify it as theft, but I can see where you're going with that.
Well,
you could say, well, they're not holding the gun to your head, but well, they kind of are.
What happens if you refuse to pay it?
That's right. Yeah, you
eventually
can't
somebody's going to show up at your house with a gun.
Yeah, yeah. Well, do me just stop paying it and let's see what happens. You can do an experiment for the show.
Right, right. I'll consider that.
It'll become the Robin Ken show here in 6 months. So,
I can still Skype from prison, right?
True. Good point.
With all our listeners.
We can start our own Occupy Prison movement.
Because, you know, they don't send you to the pound you in the ass prison.
Oh, they don't? Well, I'm not interested then.
We get caught laundering money. We're not going to white collar resort prison. No. We're going to federal pound me in the ass prison.
Now, for tax evasion, they send you the...
I was about
security.
To volunteer, but now that they're not going to send me there, I'm not on board. I don't know. Theft has a whole other it has a whole other connotation to it that I guess I don't.
Well, I know. That's why I call it that.
I know. You're firing for effect.
Exactly. I think, you know, people get used to talking about taxes as if, you know, that the words mean things. You know, if you call it what it is, then
maybe it's legalized. It's legalized government theft to allow the government to run the way it wants to run.
Yes.
Maybe that's okay.
I disagree. But...
Well, but the government thinks it's okay, and they're the government, so don't know.
Do we need to trot out that old right-wing classic? If you don't like living here, then leave.
Yeah. Sure.
Classic.
And go live somewhere else that has a higher tax rate.
So here's a maybe a closing question. So when you guys do your tax returns,
yes,
if you do them, if that's an if.
Of course we do our tax returns.
Like, do you fume? Like the
I do not fume.
You are not a fumer?
Jerry is a fumer.
Yeah, I do.
I do not fume.
Because it must just
feel that my tax rate is, quite frankly, all that excessive. I mean, it's a little discouraging when I see the big number and I think, man, that's a fair amount, but percentage-wise, it's, you know, whatever. I'd rather not pay it. I've always said that if you want to actually have a tax revolution in this country, do not allow for incremental payments throughout the year. Make everyone pay
right.
their taxes at the end of the year.
Right. Stop withholding.
So pay 10, 12, 13, 15, 20 grand out of your own pocket at the end of the year, and let's see what people think about that. I guarantee you that something would change very quickly.
Yeah, I'll buy that.
But taking out a couple, $300-$500 every check, it's like, eh.
Oh, right. And I like the refund. Like, oh, I got money
right.
back.
Because like, you feel good about getting your own money back, right? This is so great. It's my own money. It's magical. Yeah. But I'm guilty. I like my refund. It makes me happy.
It's like a little surprise.
And it's silly. My dad would cringe in terror if he knew what my refund was, so it would be really bad.
Yeah, I got it worked out so that refund's big, which is not smart.
The opposite of what I've been taught by my tax-neutral father who evens everything out. You know, he like makes payments and changes his things quarterly to make sure that he ends up with like less than $100 in tax going one way or the other.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't have that kind of time.
I don't have that. I just don't care. I'd rather get a big fat check because it prevents me from spending it throughout the year. And the way my investments are going, it's actually better for the government to hold on to it and to give it back. I get 100% of it, which is very much unlike my investments right now where I save it and get like 60% of it back at the end of the year. So
what are we going to talk about next week?
Next week? Oof, I don't know. I guess the... the revolution that'll be spreading by like wildfire.
Right.
Actually, I'm going to be out of town next week, though, so.
Oh, yeah.
This is distressing.
So it might be 2 weeks.
Go on without me.
No talker left behind.
That's right. I don't know. We need our three listeners to send in some suggestions. I think Eric had some suggestions for future topics, did he not?
Yeah, well, the one I just mentioned about talking about rights.
Yeah. We could, human rights, fundamental rights.
Yeah, we could delve into that a little bit.
Human right to health care.
Yeah.
Yeah, what did I – is that what I called it? I don't know what I – I said something.
I think it was a human right.
Said some very fluffy term that
– It was very fluffy. It was nonsense.
All right. I want to thank all of our listeners and make sure you leave us some feedback. Send us your comments. We're at facebook.com/MidwestPeace. And I think I can give out our website address now, finally. It's MidwestPeaceProcess.com. If you want to
Very
go there.
Very clever name.
Yeah, I thought so, too.
Spell it right.
You can go there and leave comments anonymously, if you like, instead of on our Facebook page. We will figure out something to talk about next time.
I don't think that will be difficult.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll have something. But until then, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Bye. Good night.
In the presidential advertising race, buzz is worth money. And no ads have been buzzier than Herman Cain's, for better and worse. Most polls say Cain is now the GOP frontrunner. His ads have been the subject of conjecture, parody, and head-scratching. NPR's Brian Naylor reports they are as unconventional as the campaign itself.
The most famous of Cain's ads is all over the internet. It features the candidate's chief of staff, Mark Block, standing outside a building and talking directly to the camera.
I really believe that Herman Cain will put United back in the United States of America. And if I didn't believe that, I wouldn't be here. We've run a campaign like nobody's ever seen. But then, America's never seen a candidate like Herman Cain. We need you to get involved, because together, we can do this. We can take this country back.
At which point, Block takes a drag off his cigarette and exhales smoke at the camera. Cut to a tight close-up of Cain, who ever so slowly smiles. It's unconventional, to say the least. No one smokes on TV anymore. There are few apparent production effects in the ad, and there's Cain's mysterious smile. But Mark McKinnon, who produced ads for the campaigns of George W. Bush and John McCain, says that unconventionality is the point.
That may be the brilliance of it. That it captures our attention. It makes us really wonder. But at the end of the day, as different and as unconventional and as weird as they are, there is a fundamental message in them that says, I'm different. I've got a different approach. People are sick of everything they've seen before. They're sick of all the slick advertising that they've seen from everybody else. So why not? Why not take a different approach? And that's kind of the whole Herman Cain message. Why not something different? Why not Herman Cain?
Cain is running a mostly conventional ad on the radio.
999 means jobs, jobs, jobs. I'm Herman Cain, a candidate for president, and I approve this message. But Obama doesn't.
As normal as that ad sounds, another video the campaign has produced verges on the surreal. It's filmed in the style of a movie western. Actor Nick Searcy climbs off a horse with a bunch of yellow flowers in his hand. He's confronted by two unsavory-looking characters. One is African-American, who pass a whiskey bottle between them and spit tobacco.
Those some pretty flowers you got there, mister.
Mm-hmm. Pretty yellow flowers.
Well, I'm glad you like them.
I'll bet that you're as yellow as those flowers right there.
Why's it always got to be about color? What are you guys, liberals?
Punches are thrown, and then Searcy steps out of character, and, well, you just kind of have to see it. But it ends like the smoking ad, with the same footage of Herman Cain and his slow smile. Mark McKinnon.
It sort of gives the impression of, you know, Herman Cain knows something you don't know, and, you know, keep your eye on this guy.
We asked the Cain campaign to provide someone to talk about their ads, to no avail. Whatever their intent, the ads would seem to be working. People are scratching their heads, perhaps, but they're talking about Herman Cain and watching. The smoking ad has been viewed nearly 1 million times on YouTube. Brian Naylor, NPR News, Washington.